Welcome to today's Indiana Chamber of Commerce Policy Issue Conference Call, hosted by Mr. Tom Schuman. During the presentation, all lines will be in a listen-only mode. If you have a question at any point during today's presentation, please press star 1. Again, to ask a question, press star 1 at any time. Thank you for your attention. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Mr. Tom Schuman.
Good morning. This is Tom Schuman with the Indiana Chamber. Thank you for joining us. As indicated in the emails regarding this call, we're going to be joined shortly by a special guest, Representative Phil Giaquinna, House Minority Leader. We're getting him connected right now, so we'll hear from him in just a few minutes.
And we do have him connected.
There we go. Thank you very much, Nick. Representative Giaquinna, thank you so much for joining us and speaking to our chamber members today.
Hi, Tom. Sorry about that. I apologize for a little technical difficulty there, but thanks for having me on the call. I appreciate it.
No problem at all. I just introduced you. Let me add a little bit before I get to the first question. First elected in 2006, Representative Giaquinna has served on a variety of policy committees during his tenure in the House. He's in his first session as leader of the Democratic Caucus. Let's start with that. You are adapting to a new role here in 2019. Talk about that adjustment and how that's gone so far from your perspective.
Well, again, thanks for having me on. I just a little bit more about me. I try to introduce myself. Some folks around the state may not know me all that well. Like you said, elected in 2006. My dad, Ben Giaquinta, actually held the seat from 1990 until 2006, and so then I took over for him and served in a variety of roles, including past chair of the Rules Committee and, of course, a longtime member of the Public Policy Committee. And then this past November, elected leader of our caucus. It's certainly a definitely new role for me. There's some things I were maybe a little bit easier for me to do on some things, and now I've got to remember I'm leading a group, and it's definitely a different perspective on things, and particularly our new caucus with 9 new members, a majority of whom are women, and we're a very diverse caucus, represent all parts of the state, and so they have obviously different opinions and views on issues. So as Speaker Bosma likes to say, sometimes it is definitely like herding cats. But it's been a lot of fun so far, and we're enjoying it. So far so good.
And he's okay if you borrow his phrase of herding cats. You guys have reached agreement on that.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Speaker's been very helpful. I've actually sought out his advice on a number of things on, you know, with staffing issues, and we had a ramp up there, and just kind of how to maneuver on some things. He's been very easy to work with, and been very helpful. I've had a good relationship with the speaker over the years.
Excellent. Well, we're 6 weeks in. The pace, I think, is certainly picked up. Seemed to be a very busy week and upcoming week as we near committee deadlines and deadlines for the first half of the session. What has you encouraged thus far about what's taken place during these opening weeks of the session?
Well, in my opening speech that I gave back in January, you know, one of the main things I wanted for our caucus to do, we talked about, and it's something that I've always believed in from my early time, my days there in the legislature, in my years, is to be, and really, frankly, my regular job too, is we want to be helpful. We want to offer solutions. We want to be, I like to call us pragmatic problem solvers. How can we, you know, we may not necessarily be the author of most of these bills, but we're going to have influence and make suggestions and have ideas on either how to make the bills better or come to the table with our own ideas. And we've we're coming up on, as Democrats at authoring bills, we've offered several. We might break our record, actually, from a couple years ago. And then on some of the bigger issues I know that a lot of our folks have participated in, whether it's, we talk about expansion of pre-K education. I'm hearing some really good things there. We had a school safety bill that passed out of the House, and we've offered a number of amendments. A couple of them were accepted, so we were happy to see some of those things go through. Obviously, the budget's coming down, I believe, next Tuesday, and we've been working closely with the Chairman Todd Houston on some ideas, and we'll kind of see how that goes. There are some things that are kind of bottled up. I know they're going to start in the Senate, particularly with hate crime, but we've had a number of conversations with the Speaker on kind of where we think our caucus will end up on that with regards to hate crime legislation. So I'm hearing that's going to start in the Senate and move over to the House in the second half. So we'll see how the budget goes with what the priorities are with Chairman Houston and House Republicans. But we will also have some amendments to see what we can do with regard to the budget and how to improve education in the state and those types of things.
I should have mentioned for you and our listeners at the beginning, we are joined by the Chamber Advocacy Team here, so you'll hear a few more voices chiming in here in a little bit. Talk about the bias crimes, as you mentioned, scheduled a hearing next Monday morning, actually, in the Senate. The Chamber's identified or adopted a policy position that law hopefully be as inclusive as possible, with the priority that a law be passed to get us off that list of five states without a law. Is that the approach your caucus takes, or does it differ a little bit?
Well, we've started to just in the last in the last week or so, kind of just started to talk to some members about the different options. So I've got a couple members that I rely on to search out and ask and get a kind of a tally for me of where folks, and I haven't seen the results yet. So I know, Representative Greg Porter from Indianapolis has been a champion of the bias crime, hate crime bill over the last maybe 16 years. So we kind of looked to him a little bit for some guidance on these things. We've sort of advocated in agreement with what the governor spoke about in his State of the State address with regards to the list, reflecting the state personnel policy. So we'll just kind of have to see how that I have a feeling that maybe the list that we feel should be there will be there, but there may be some others added to the list to make it as inclusive as possible. And if it comes over the House, I believe that it will have the votes to get out. But of course, it's got to get out of committee and get to the floor and those sorts of things. So that's kind of where we are. I believe I have a good feeling. You never know. I'm not very good at making predictions of what happens in a legislative session, but I've got pretty good. I don't know. I feel good about this, that we're going to get something done.
Well, the one thing certainly from the chamber perspective we've noted is the number of bills that were filed this year, just that increased interest, that increased seemingly understanding that it is time to do something to move on and kind of wrap up this issue.
This is Kevin, and I was just going to add that I think it makes a big difference that the governor has stepped out on this issue and leaned into it, because it just, from my observation over many years, it makes a big difference when the executive steps in and weighs in on an issue and offers their support.
Yeah, I agree, and I work very closely with my local chamber, Greater Fort Wayne, and our regional Northeast Regional Chamber folks up here, and I know they've voice their support too. So if the other local chambers start to call their legislators as well. But Kevin, I agree with you I've had one-on-one conversations with the governor, and his support is still there and pretty rock solid on that. So I agree with you. Very helpful.
Representative Giaquinta, another priority for chamber members is certainly addressing the poor health outcomes in our state as a result of smoking. So not a new issue. Again, another one that's been talked about the last few years. Looking at it in a couple of ways, both in increasing the cigarette tax as well as raising the legal smoking age from 18 to 21. What are your thoughts on those issues as that develops throughout the session?
Well, I mean, I personally would support both of those. I supported the 75-cent increase back in 2007. In fact, that was my very first year. People tell you when you're a freshman, you're not supposed to vote for tax increases if you want to make it back. Well, I voted for that one. I've been back ever since. So I don't think those type of things should scare us. So I would be supportive of another tax increase on the cigarettes, and then I would probably, frankly, be more inclined to support the raising it from 19 to 21. I'm not as optimistic about this this session. Could be wrong. I will tell you there are some members of our caucus that are interested in possibly proposing some amendments. Whether to the budget or there's some other bills that are out there and coming up here in the last week where something could be germane to a particular bill. But and the other thing, too, is I want to make sure that if it does happen, that it goes into, not the general fund, but into specific funds there to help promoting good health. And because I as someone who represents an urban district, particularly a couple of my zip codes that have folks with really bad health. I mean, I've seen the data. It's not very good. And so we need to do all we can in healthy state. It's very good for business. I mean, folks that own businesses have a lot of employees. They want their folks to show up for work, cuts back on health care costs, all that stuff. I know I'm preaching to the choir on this. So I certainly support it. And I believe a vast number of our caucus supports these two issues that you mentioned.
Any thoughts on why it's been so difficult to get that overall consensus, however? It just seems, again, that the state, the legislators, the governors we've had have done so many things to move our economic climate forward. We have a great business climate in a lot of areas, but this is a little bit of a black eye on what we're trying to accomplish. Any idea what it will take to really get that consensus that's needed to move these forward?
I wonder if it really has to do with thinking that those that sell cigarettes along the border states, that there's potentially a loss. In other words, we're lower, so the Michigan, the Ohio folks are coming across and buying these cigarettes from Indiana. That maybe there's a loss of revenue potentially there. I don't. Other than that, I don't really know. Unless it's a rural issue versus urban suburban, I'm not really sure. The other thing too is I think unfortunately sometimes the longer we go without increasing, like for example, we did 75 cents, maybe if 5 years, 4 years later, we would have done another 75 cents, 50, something like that, but it's a smaller, because now we're talking $1 or $2 back, and to catch up. And the farther you go, it's going to just get higher and higher, so we might as well bite the bullet and do something sooner, because we're going to fall farther behind as the years go by.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier, the perception of, not voting for tax increases. It's kind of the chamber looks at it the same way. We don't come out a lot of times and advocate for a tax increase, but if you have a good reason to do it, and you have the research and you have the information to back it up, there are times when it's necessary.
And
we had the roads increase and the tax increase, the gas tax increase. So there are some others maybe that have gotten in front of this idea, but so maybe that's, they don't want to do back-to-back years. I don't know.
I think that's exactly right, and I think that's maybe, I would speculate that that's why the governor's gun shy about this as well. But I would emphasize that from the chamber's perspective, the reason to do it is not to raise money, although that is a side benefit. The reason to do it is that smokers are price sensitive, and they will quit if you raise the price through the tax substantially. And perhaps more importantly, it creates a higher barrier of entry for young people to ever start smoking, and that's critically important because 95% of all people who smoked throughout their lives started before age 21. And if we can raise the age and raise the price, we'll save thousands of young people from ever beginning smoking.
Well, and like every tax increase, Kevin, that argument very quickly that you just laid out, if you can do that for any tax increase, I think the public's okay with it. Whether it's up here in Fort Wayne just in the last year or two, raising a tax and it was dedicated towards streets and alley repair, sidewalks, those things like that, the neighborhood, the neighbors, you know, appreciate that. And so they know where it's going. We have found, for example, that the gas tax increase has proved to be well received by, let's be honest, by folks. There is no backlash to legislators. So I think if you can lay out the plan of how you're going to use it and the benefits and things like that, it really shouldn't be scary.
Yeah, and our polling suggests that there's strong voter support across the state as well, a significant majority of Hoosiers support in cigarette tax.
Yeah.
Representative Giaquinta, I know one of the priorities for your caucus and an issue that almost everyone agrees on is increasing teacher pay. I think everybody wants to do it. The question is how. Do you see this as allocating more of the existing dollars to the classroom? Do you see it as being new additional funding or some type of combination of that?
yes. I mean, currently, things kind of funnel through the school funding formula. And then from there, school districts have to make choices. But you have to pay your light bills, pay your all those things, and sort of what's left is what's used then for teacher pay raises. In my opinion, that's where it's going to have to start, is more money through the school funding formula. Now, there have been other suggestions, and that's where, I'll be honest with you, I think a lot of us, Republican, Democrat, legislators, have just kind of a problem with, we are not the school board members. And so I know some members are probably thinking, well, how do we know for sure that the money that we allocate is actually going to get to teacher pay raises and you're not going to use it for other things? But again, that's not really our role to decide what it's going to be used for, unless we can come up with specific ways and uses, just kind of almost like I just said regarding the tax increases. If folks know exactly where it's going to go, I think you're going to get approval. And I believe if legislators know for sure, if we can somehow figure out a way to know that money allocated through the school funding formula is going to get to teacher pay rate, I think we're all going to be okay with that. I think where the hesitancy amongst some members is it going to go toward other things, and have the school board up here, for example, in Fort Wayne Community Schools, they've closed three schools. They're in pretty good financial shape. They kind of got an idea of where things are now with competition, if you will, among from vouchers and charity. They kind of got an idea. And I think are pretty good now, in pretty good shape to move forward with, if we can get some more money to go ahead and do pretty good, decent size raise for teachers. So, but that's where I think people are sort of stuck. And hopefully there'll be enough money in the school funding formula that we can get that money to teachers.
We have about 6 or 7 minutes left with Representative Giaquinta. Again, we thank him so much for taking time to join us for a portion of this call. So, listeners, chamber members, if you have questions or comments for Representative Giaquinta, please do so in the next few minutes. And, of course, you can ask questions the second half of the program as we continue on. Hearing no questions, I asked you, Representative Giaquinta, I asked earlier what you're encouraged about in the session so far. Anything that's been disappointing in these opening weeks?
Well, you know, the probably a disappointment is still really no hearing regarding redistricting reform. We're obviously running out of time. It's not this year, it'll be next, but the fact that we really haven't even had a discussion, the bill that's been stuck in committee on our side, and I'm not sure what they've done on the Senate side. But that's probably been, I think, the number one issue, I think, that we just haven't heard much about. And I know Reverend Jerry Torr and others have advocated, they filed bills for to do something with regard to independent redistricting. So I'd say kind of off the top of my head, that's probably been something, only because it really hasn't even gained much discussion at all. So that would probably be the first thing that I can think of that comes to my mind that has been a disappointment.
You referenced, obviously, a working relationship with Speaker Bosma and your caucus members working with their colleagues across the aisle. We also noted a number of key issues starting in the Senate this year. How closely do you work with senators at this point, or is it more a matter of seeing what comes out of the Senate and then taking it up and seeing how you're going to shape it or form it in the House?
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about gaming legislation, for example, as former ranking member of public policy, I've worked with both the current chair, Representative Smalls, and Senator Alting, chair of public policy in the Senate. And I've had conversations with both of them, and of course with a lot of the players with regards to the issue of the issue with the licenses and where they should go. We have two in Gary. Does one move? Do you move the other one? Kind of within the Gary area. What do you do with the second license? Those type of things. And then I know there's some, you know, a little bit of alcohol issues, a few things moving on both sides. But Senator Lana and I have a pretty good relationship. I'm going to be meeting with Senator Bray here shortly. That's a new working relationship with me. Of course, I knew Senator Long very well. He was my senator, in fact. but obviously from Fort Wayne, we would see each other all the time. So working with Senator Bray is a little new, but we've done some things together in the past as well. And so we do communicate, kind of know what's coming over and kind of looking forward to working with the new Senate leadership.
Last question, Representative Giaquina would ask you to give our listeners a little bit of the inside perspective. I mentioned we're nearing the end of the first half of the session. You have second reading deadline coming up next Thursday, third reading deadline on Monday the 25th. Talk about those deadline days a little bit. I mean, you know, our team, our advocacy team kind of sees it a bit, but those listening on the phone, give them a sense of how they're different, how tense they might get. What some of the things that are kind of going on behind the scenes that you're facing those deadlines on key pieces of legislation?
Yeah, that's a good question. The committee deadline day is coming up. I guess it's Tuesday. And then, so we will, I know we actually go into session, we start session Wednesday at 1:30. We'll be in again on Thursday, probably pretty late. And then, so those 2 days will be second reading amendment days. And they'll be late. We'll go late into the evening, including next Monday as well. Tuesday sort of next, the following Monday, and then a week from this Tuesday is just sort of the backup day. We have to spill over into Tuesday. But the calendar just starts, and this happens every session where things just sort of back up. I know that Speaker Bosma has encouraged his caucus chairs to kind of get bills, get going, but when we were in the majority, same thing happened. Things just happen. It's probably just human nature. I don't know if people like to. I don't think it's necessarily procrastinating. It's just I think we are all taking our time to kind of, you know, vet and go through the bills. But there will be some long evenings coming up. There'll definitely be some negotiations, I'm sure. But I did notice, though, that some of the government's priority bills have already made it out in advance. So the biggest thing, biggest one now left is really the budget. And the budget, and I think there's a pre-K bill that I'm encouraged, I'm hearing some good things about, too. So, but the budget's the biggest one, and there will be amendments, I'm sure, from both sides. And we'll just have to work our way through that and see what happens. Of course, then it goes to the Senate. We comes, and then the conference committee report time in April, where all the real work will begin too as well.
So this, as we say here many times, this is the end of the first third of the session, really.
Yes.
Plenty of activity still to come. Well,
exactly.
Representative Giaquina, I know you have another appointment this morning. Again, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to speak with our chamber members, and best of luck as the session moves forward.
Thank you very much. Appreciate having me on. If you want to do a recap or something like that toward the end of session or after session, I'd be happy to do this again. I appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Uh-huh. Thank you. See you, Kevin. Thank you. Bye.
All right. We'll continue our discussion. We'll touch on some of those same issues and certainly some other ones. Let's maybe wrap up the talk on the bias crimes, Kevin. As we mentioned, made reference to a hearing on Monday. But give the listeners a little bit of perspective, which bill's being considered and maybe what the time frame is.
Yes, indeed. I don't know that it's officially been posted yet, but we've been made aware a few days ago that there will be a hearing on Senate Bill 12 Monday morning at 8 o'clock. That bill is authored by Senator Bohagic from LaPorte County and Public Policy Committee Chairman Ron Alting, and that's where the bill will be sent from the Rules Committee. That bill includes a comprehensive list of categories that will be protected under the bias crime statute. It also has some, I guess I'd call it generic language. I'm looking at the lawyers at the other end of the table here. That also says essentially any other category or affiliation would be covered and could have sentences enhanced if there is evidence of bias or hate towards the victim. The chamber will be there in force supporting that bill. We've got a number of our board members and other friends and allies coming to testify, and we know there will be others as well. We know that there will be some strong opposition from religious right groups, but I think this could go as fast as committee hearing on Tuesday, Monday, second reading on Tuesday, and third reading on Thursday of next week. And then, as Representative Giaquina indicated, we'll see what happens in the House.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. We're going to look ahead to a number of things, but we'll catch up on a few things that just happened in the past week. Local government. We've talked about township reform for a number of years, and we had a situation this past week where something that looked very positive turned into a surprising defeat, at least by the margin of a bill that was defeated in the House. Bill Waltz, can you put some details behind what I just said, and maybe we'll add a little commentary on the end, too.
Sure. Once again, you know, like last year, unfortunately, with the bill to consolidate, require the merger of the small townships, the House, again, rejected another substantial provision that kind of attempt at trying to make a meaningful reform on the township government front that would have eliminated township boards. These are the three-member boards across the state, that from our viewpoint, frankly, do not provide a great function, not really needed to overlook the township. So it would have eliminated just short of 3,000 elected officials who, you know, as I've been putting it, do
little more than kind of look over the shoulder of the township trustee and provide a function that could have easily been done as the bill provided by the county council to provide that kind of fiscal oversight. It ran into this, what I call a wall of self-interest. You know, a lot of people, the vote, unfortunately, was 75 against, 18 for. So you had a lot of folks out there, for whatever reasons, it's hard to understand, voted against it. A lot of people who, you know, in other contexts, you know, are for efficient government and best practices, and they're against cronyism and, you know, against turf protection. But in this context, you know, it's their friends back home they see in the coffee shops, not to be too, you know, critical, but, you know, that's what was happening.
Well, this defeat on the House floor came after a second reading amendment in which a 2-year study committee was added in, but the effective date of the bill was still kept in place. It would have eliminated those boards in 2022, I believe, as a result.
Right.
Kevin, we've been talking about this issue for many, many years. Again, this seemed like a logical step forward. What is the roadblock? When we talked earlier, what's it going to take to get consensus on X issue? What's the roadblock here? Well, why can't we seem to break through on some common sense legislation on local government reform?
Well, I think one, the township trustees themselves are very motivated. Our polling that we've done in the past indicates that the public is supportive of eliminating townships entirely, but they're not motivated like the township trustees and the boards to save their positions. Unfortunately, the Farm Bureau has got involved in this issue. And from our perspective, we don't necessarily think they should, but many of their members, including their president, right, and their new president, are township board members. And for one reason or another, they want to protect their turf and whatever benefits they're receiving as a township board member. But it is frustrating to have particularly members of the Republican caucus and the Republican Party saying they're for, you know, smaller government, less government, more efficient government, but yet they hold on to this remnant from the 19th century.
So, yeah, as we've mentioned before, the facts are on the side of the chamber position and the position that's embraced by so many. People don't know who their trustee is. They don't use the trustee services. As Kevin and Bill mentioned, they want to see, people want to see more effective, more efficient government. So
the trustees don't hold regular hours. There was a series of articles last fall that pointed out that one trustee went to Florida for 2 months and there was no access to the trustee's office during that time.
All right. Well, we will, as I said, in a long time, this goes back to at least the chamber involvement, 20-plus years at least, over in this issue with various studies and work that we've done. We will continue to plug away on this issue. I want to talk about some technology innovation type issues. A bill that was heard this past week, referred to kind of as the governor's economic development bill, but certainly talking about venture capital tax credit and some other provisions. And you're going to hear from the first time on this call from the newest member of our chamber team, Adam Berry, is working in the areas of economic development, technology, and innovation. Adam, welcome, and give the listeners a sense of what took place on this legislation.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. And happy to be here and share with you all some exciting news. And in terms of the governor's economic bill, it includes a lot of provisions making modifications to some of the IEDC tax incentives, but probably the most impactful provision included in Senate Bill 563 is making the venture capital investment tax credit transferable. This puts us in line with a number of other states, including all of our surrounding states, that allows for out-of-state investors who have no tax liability in the state to monetize that that credit that they would receive on sort of an open market platform. The IEDC does have some discretion on how those how the credits will be transferable in the process for that. But the most important part to remember is that, you know, in order for the state to become more attractive to outside investment, which right now the state falls, I think we're 35th in terms of the amount of VC money that comes into the state, we need to make it possible and more attractive for out-of-state investors. And making this credit transferable is a giant step in that direction.
You know, Adam, this is one of those areas where it kind of shows that the issue never really goes away. As I recall, Indiana was fairly aggressive in establishing a tax credit in the first place, but other states have increased their limits, included the transferability, so it's really back to playing a little bit of catch-up. We kind of checked the box a little bit at one point, but now it's time to reopen it and move it even further.
Yeah, that's right. So Kentucky, for example, Indiana gives investors 20% credit. So if you invest $1 million in a company, your credit is $200,000. Well, in Kentucky, that percentage is 40%, and they have transferability. So let's say a company lives in Evansville, thinking about starting a company. Nothing prevents them from going across the Ohio River, starting in Henderson, and raising that capital, which is very difficult for every entrepreneur, but making it easier just by going 15 miles across the bridge.
As with many issues, the Chamber has led on this for several years. These discussions certainly were quite in play quite a bit 2 years ago, and while the venture capital credit wasn't extended at that time, that did result in the Next Level Fund and kind of a different source of some capital for Indiana businesses. So, again, one the Chamber is heavily focused on, and Adam, with support from the rest of the team, will continue to emphasize this and work towards making this a reality. Another one falls into a bit in the same category, maybe applies to a smaller audience, but very important is data centers. That conversation started a couple years ago. We have some Chamber board members and others who have been helping make the case for that and the importance of that. Talk about the data center bill a little bit.
Sure. Briefly, the bill was amended this week. Her testimony last week, amended this week. Long story short, essentially what this bill does is allows for communities to identify different areas where projects, data centers can be built. There is a minimum amount of investment that needs to take place during the first 5 years, depending on the size of the county. But what the purpose of the bill is that it exempts purchases of data center equipment for a period of either 25 years if the investment is less than $750,000, or 50 years if the investment is greater than $750,000. And as Tom mentioned, this is an initiative that the Chamber has been a part of from the beginning, has a strong coalition of support. But really, the bill has been designed for and really pushed strongly by a group called Data Crossroads, looking to really refurbish the former State Line power plant in Hammond on Lake Michigan. They've committed to the first $50 million of investment, regardless of whether or not this bill is passed, but testimony indicated that the investment that they're prepared to make could go as high as $1 billion if the state is able to pass this new incentive.
The important thing, I think we've pointed out previously about these type of projects, is while the data centers themselves may not create a large number of jobs, they certainly attract other companies and organizations that bring new jobs, new investment to that area.
That's right.
So I throw a couple of bill numbers in there in case people were following. The economic development bill, the governor's economic development bill was 563 that passed out, has a number of provisions, as Adam indicated. So tax people.
And where does that go next? Is that to the floor, or is that to?
It's actually being held. There's potential amendments,
okay.
Being talked about, maybe to expand some of those provisions even a little bit more. And then the data center bill, if people were tracking that closely, there were a couple of them. One of them was Representative Soliday's bill that kind of grew out of his area. And then another one was authored by Representative Presel, which is the bill that now will move on. It's House Bill 1405.
Thanks, Bill. We referenced in the first half of the call, certainly Representative Giaquinta talked about the budget. A lot of the activity thus far has been, I'd say, behind the scenes as the House Ways and Means Committee has hearings and considers all the various proposals. Now it starts to take a more higher profile as we near these deadlines, Bill, so kind of give an overview of the budget and what might be happening in the coming days and weeks.
Well, the budget goes through these stages. The House will pass its budget to be distinguished from the budget that ultimately will be passed by the Senate, both of which can be distinguished from the House or the bill that was introduced by the governor and the budget agency. So they're all kind of setting their ground, and I think the significance of looking at what comes out of the House next week will be what's in it, what are the House's priorities. That kind of sets the stage for the subsequent discussions, the real heart of the debate that comes in the conference committees after the Senate has, just taken a look at what the House does. And that look by the Senate is going to happen right away, too, at least to some degree, because the House bill gets passed out by the deadline next week. The Senate has already scheduled a hearing for public testimony on the House bill for the first week of March when they come back. So it's all just rolling along there, and I was interested to hear Representative Giaquinta talk about things they want to see from his caucus in that they've been talking to the House Ways and Means Chairman Houston about, maybe on the education front. So, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what gets included by the House.
Tom, I might add that this is all in the context of what by most standards would be considered a tight budget because of the additional funding that has been identified as being needed for Department of Child Services and Medicaid. And I would observe the governor, I can't remember if it was yesterday or the day before, was reported, made a speech up in South Bend where he said he would not rule out a tax increase for funding needs before the end of the session. So he's not pushing it, but it was interesting that he said he wouldn't rule it out. And that may go back to our desire and call to raise the cigarette tax, which would be the most likely place they would go if they do anything in that area.
Mike Ripley, on that smoking issue we talked about with Representative Giaquinta, I think we've emphasized this even in our previous call here, that actually this year the goal to raise the smoking age has gained some momentum. Where things stand with that legislation to try to increase the smoking age to 21?
Yeah, Tom, there was a physical on the bill, Senator Head's bill, to move the tobacco age from 18 to 21. There's actually a loss of revenue, went to tax and physical. I believe Kevin has had discussions with Senator Holdman, and we're hopeful that he's going to at least hear the bill and take a look and try to offset some of the revenue loss with the e-liquids tax that is moving in the House.
Yeah, and I would add, Mike, that he may wait until that e-liquids bill comes over and amend that. And the estimated loss in revenue, it's important to point out, is because the bill is expected to do what it's intended to do, which is reduce teen smoking and reduce young people from becoming
which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing.
Which is what we want.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I thought I'd be remiss if I didn't point that out.
Right.
So he may or may not move Senator Head's bill, but he's indicated that he's keeping his eye on the e-liquids bill and that perhaps the revenue increase that's in that bill could be used to offset the projected revenue loss from raising the smoking age.
Well, that does become a problem then if he waits and doesn't move the Heads bill, because we don't have anything, we don't have the companion bill that's in the House moving. That's not going to be heard because Public Health is finished with their committees. Representative.
Yeah, he would have to amend the language into the e-liquids bill.
Yes.
So the good news is that the idea has gained support and will continue to be in play throughout the session.
That's our expectation and hope, certainly. But there's clearly more legislators talking about the teen vaping and what a crisis that's become than in any session prior.
Mike, asked you to comment. Give us the listeners today one or two other things going on. I know there's a long list, but let's one or two other things in your area that they should be aware
one
of.
One really important issue that was in the Senate pensions and labor this past week, and Senator Talian has a bill to raise the workers' comp benefits by 10%. Both the chain we testified along with the Indiana Manufacturers Association against the bill. Senator Boots had an amendment to take out the 10% and increase it by 2%, and the bill got a 5-5 vote tie, which is eligible to come back. Senator Walker was not present during the time. The history of the increase in workers' comp benefits has been the last time there was an increase would have been 2013, and it went into effect the 3 years of 2014, 15, and 16, and it was coupled with while there was an increase for workers, there was a reduction in premiums for employers as a result of the 200% reimbursement rate for hospitals. We've seen a reduction actually in the premiums. And so the discussion was that we communicated, both IMA and us, on Wednesday, was that we think that if, you know, we're going to increase the benefits, then employers ought to be getting a little offset for that, and there are some ways that we can do that, but those discussions won't be had until later this summer. And so what we were looking at was a discussion of a package arrangement, and so that I think that influenced many members on the committee. It remains to be seen whether I don't know that Senator Boots is going to have another committee, but if he does, they could bring it back and rediscuss it. I've got to check the schedule for next week. I don't know that he does, but if he does, and nobody's talked to Senator Walker, to my knowledge, so it's eligible to return if in fact there's another committee hearing.
Greg Ellis, I guess I asked you the same thing. Give us one or two things that members should know. And I also know this week you met with U.S. Senator Mike Braun as he's in his office here in Indianapolis. And certainly Senator Braun has jumped into the fray pretty quickly in Washington, being involved in some legislation he's introduced and things he's working on.
Sure. At the state level this week, the extraterritorial bill that we've discussed, I think we did it initially on this call. It passed out of committee. It got amended. What it had done was it allowed municipalities to regulate zoning and other issues in increments of 2, 4, 10, and up to 25 miles in certain areas. What this would do would be pull back everything except for the 2-mile fringe that they would be allowed to regulate, and that passed out of the Senate yesterday. I think the vote was 39-8, so that's moving forward. The other important bill, I think to this group would be House Bill 1518. It's alcohol matters. It's Representative Smaltz. It's an omnibus bill. There were concerns from some of our members about the age of people that had to sell. Alcohol was going to be raised from 19 to 21. That got amended and pulled back, and it also was going to dictate where alcohol could be placed in a retail establishment, and that got pulled back. As far as meeting with Senator Braun, I got a half hour of his time, which is pretty good, and I identified, you know, some of the issues that we'd been hearing about from our members, tariffs and trade, concerns over the shutdown, tax issues, and he was receptive to those, but he kind of also identified what he felt were big issues that he was already focused on, and that was health care, infrastructure, the overall budget. And he asked me if I would help him as he got more into this over the summer months. He intends on having some advisory groups meet here in Indiana for business members to participate in, and I, of course, will do that. So as these roll out and what areas he will tell us, we'll be talking to all of you trying to get people to participate.
So, yeah, we certainly encourage to look for those opportunities as more information becomes available, and would appreciate any involvement you can offer there to help Senator Braun. We are nearing the end of our time. I guess I'll ask for some general comments. What do we expect as the next couple of weeks roll out as we move forward on some of these key issues?
I think seeing what's in and what's out of the House budget will be important and create a flurry of activity. Seeing what happens, assuming the bias crimes bill gets out of the committee on Monday, there's arguably still a lot of work to do to garner the votes on the floor of the Senate, and how that plays out will be very important as well. Those are two things that come to mind.
I'll note we did not touch on education workforce issues today. Jason Bierce, our advocacy expert in that area, was out of the office at a conference at an event today. We will catch up on those, and you'll see those in the legislative report each Friday. We'll talk about those during our next call also. All right, without any questions, we will go ahead and wrap up. Thank you once again for joining us. Just a few comments before we close. Do look for the weekly legislative reports each Friday. We'll talk about these bills and many more. You'll see the latest on. And also look for those special reports during the course of the week as we update on the latest developments. The Chamber's legislative agenda is also available. That will link to that in the follow-up email that you'll receive today, and you can also access that through the legislative report. A reminder about the March 12th Chamber Day Dinner with Arthur Brooks as the keynote speaker. We recently did a podcast with Mr. Brooks, and I got a sense from what we heard during that half-hour discussion with him that you're truly going to enjoy as he expands on some of those topics. You can access that podcast on the website. We'll link to that also in the follow-up email.
Yeah, that's a great discussion.
And that's on March 12th. We'll be back with you 3 days later on this policy call, Friday, March 15th, 4 weeks from today. We'll be in the midst of, the early part of the second half of the session. We'll update on key issues at that time. Once again, thanks for joining us today and for your support of the Indiana Chamber. Have a wonderful Friday and weekend.
Thank you all for your attention. This concludes today's conference call. All participants may now disconnect.